This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to Girls on Porn. I'm Laura.
I'm Rachel.
And we love porn.
This is our porn review podcast.
We talk about what we love and roast what we hate.
Helping you find hot, ethical, just plain better porn for your spank bank.
And we're looking at everything. Today we're joined by a very special guest. Welcome to Drew Gerza.
Yay! Drew Gerza
is
an award-winning disability awareness consultant and the chief disability officer and co-founder of Handy, a sex tech company for and by disabled people. Drew has guested on a number of podcasts, including Dan Savage's Savage Love and Carmen Esposito's Query. He has spoken all over the world on sex, disability, and what it means to be a queer cripple.
He is also the host of Disability After Dark, the podcast shining a bright light on disability stories, which was nominated for a Canadian Podcast Award, a Queerty Award, and was chosen as an honoree at the 2020 Webby Awards. Ooh. Drew is also the creator of the viral hashtag, Disabled People Are Hot. Welcome, Drew.
Yes, hi. They are. They
fucking
are hot.
Awesome to have you.
It's such a pleasure to be here. It's so exciting.
Yeah.
Are you in Canada right now? Is that true?
I'm in Toronto, Canada. That's right.
Oh.
Yep.
I've been to Toronto maybe for like a total of a weekend, but I'm going to say with great authority that it's an awesome city. I think Toronto's really cool.
I mean, right now it's a very ghosty city. Not much is happening here right now, but it's a good town. It's a good town.
Is there snow there? What's happening outside?
Yeah, today there's not snow, but it's like...
And now Drew with the weather.
it's like minus 11 Celsius right now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Couldn't tell you what that is in Fahrenheit. So it
beach
sounds
weather.
Really cold.
But you guys are in New York, right? New York?
I'm in New York.
And I'm in Colorado, wild twist.
Yeah.
So it's also cold here, but usually I'm in LA, but right now I'm home with fam. And now all the fans know where to find me as if people are trying to come get me.
But as we've learned, time and place doesn't matter.
Time is irrelevant.
It's all a construct.
Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about your podcast, Disability After Dark.
Yeah, my podcast, Disability After Dark, is now 4.5 years old. I started it originally as a sex and disability podcast, talking solely about sex and disability every week, because I noticed that I've been working in this industry now as a freelance, like, disability consultant in sex, disability, and queerness for almost 10 years now.
Oh, wow.
And I realized about 4 years ago, I was like, there's no podcast specifically dedicated to sex and disability. And I was like, well, I was already doing that. So I was writing stuff for HuffPost, for like out.com, for all these big outlets. And I was like, what if I just turned that into like a spoken word 30 to 40 minute conversation with an audience? What do I just do?
Yeah.
What do I just try? I put it out there to just try. And I thought, oh, it's going to, no one will listen to this. It'll go maybe 5 episodes and then die.
Yeah.
And then, you know, somehow it's kept going over, you know, 229 episodes now.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's I'm really, really proud of it. It's expanded now. It's not just sex anymore, because I was like, there's so much more to disability that I want to explore.
Right.
And I don't want to make 5 different podcasts to like, talk about all the things
topic.
That I wanted. Yeah. So I was like, I'll just call it a story podcast and bring people on to kind of chat about that. But I've had, you know, I've had porn stars on the show. I've had escorts. I've had people that I've fucked on the show. Like I've had everybody on the show. Like, it's been a really interesting show because it gets people to think about disability and sexuality in a different way. And it gives disabled people a space to talk about their experiences, but also non-disabled people a space to go, oh, I never considered that before, and I'm curious. I want to learn more.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, we have a lot of, we had a lot of listeners recommend you as a guest for our show.
Oh, that's great. That's awesome. Yeah. That's so nice.
I know. Yeah.
Your fans and we are were pulling like, for you.
Absolutely. And that's why we reached out.
Yeah. That's wild to have people that you fucked on your show. That's a territory that Rachel and I have not broached.
We haven't done it yet. No.
We have not yet been like, ah, personal experiences. Come on. And right. Like, talk
I can,
about it.
I can barely get a text back. I'm not going to get someone to guest on your show, you know?
Good well, I mean, I've been lucky in that the sex workers that I work with to have my needs met.
Nice.
You know, we're friends too. So I said, listen, I want you to come on the show and talk about kind of what it was like being your first time with a wheelchair user or your first time with me and talk about some of the stuff you may have been afraid of because people tend to be really scared to engage sexually with disabled people. And so I was like, well, if you come on, you're a hot porn star that all these gay men like to watch. So if you come on and say, yeah, I fucked Drew Gerza, it was great. Here's why you think, if you talk about how like, okay, it was. Right. Then maybe the communities will be less afraid to engage.
Yeah, absolutely.
See, this is brilliant. Also, just like having someone on to like provide an endorsement for yourself personally. Right. I respect it.
I fucked him. He was great.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit more about your journey into sex positivity and when you're like how you found your way into the sex space in particular?
I was queer. I was in a wheelchair and I wanted to get my dick sucked and I was like, no one is helping me with that. So what if I talk about it more? Maybe somebody will want to sleep with me. And like, but that wasn't the only reason, obviously, but like it was a big driving force. It's like, I want to be included here. And I found being in the gay community as a disabled person who very visibly disabled too, people didn't give me a second look because of my disability. They thought all these things about me that weren't true or these misconceptions about being disabled. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I have this platform and I have all these things I want to say. So why don't I just... And I started emailing HuffPost and Out.com and all these queer magazines saying, can I share my story with you?
Yeah.
And they would say, oh, we've never had anybody want to do that before. So I was able to get my foot in the door and do some blogging and do some like light... You know, the first article I ever wrote, I think, was like, the 5 reasons why having sex with a disabled person is the best sex you've ever had or something.
Yeah.
Really like clickbaity at first, but it was a way to get in the door and people to notice that like we can have these discussions. And then the more and more I started doing it, I realized that like, oh, there's a whole community here of people that need this kind of conversation.
Totally.
Yeah.
What do you think are some of the biggest misconceptions people have about having sex with someone has a disability?
I mean, the biggest one is that we are non-sexual because we are disabled, we are inherently asexual.
Right.
Now, there are people with disabilities who are totally asexual who that is their identity. That's how they identify and they're not into sex. That's fine. But to assume that because we're disabled, we can't have sex.
Yeah.
That's just ableism on it. Like, that's just like...
On a massive scale.
Yeah. And then, I mean, the next biggest one is that my genitals don't work because I'm disabled, which I feel is also really super ableist because even if I couldn't get an erection and I couldn't get hard and I didn't want to get hard, like that doesn't mean I'm not enjoying what's happening. And
exactly.
To place everything on this one body part is really unfair.
Yeah. We talk about that a lot in porn too, you know, it's like placing all of the importance just on like, an end product.
Or specific standards, like very specific standards of what sex is and what sex looks like. You know, we talk about what sex acts actually are and how limiting it is to be like, it's exactly this kind of penetration. Yeah. It results in this. It prioritizes the pleasure of one very specific demographic.
Yeah. Yes. It is just penetration and that's it.
Nothing else.
And it's all about the money shot, which we all know is not true. It's the whole experience that you should be enjoying.
It's kissing, intimacy, it's everything else. Yeah,
I want to know what's on that list for you, like clickbait, clickbaity list of like reasons why disability sex is going to be the best sex you ever had. And I have guesses, but if you want to toss out a couple,
I mean, I literally wrote this like 10 years ago, so I have no idea what I said back then. But I'm sure it was like. Something like, you know, the positions are different and that's why they're awesome. Something like communication is the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Something like, you know, I'm sure something like my dick does work. And here's why I'm great. Because that was 10 years ago. Like now my views have changed a bit where I would never say like, my dick works and it's the best. Like now it would be something like my body is really hot because of disability and here's why.
Yeah.
Like, so it was giving people a glimpse of like, this disabled person can still be attractive. Or yes. Is attractive or always was attractive, not still mm-hmm. be. So like right. what, you know, was attractive. So I think, you know, it was a way, and I was speaking to, when I wrote that article, I was speaking mostly to like gay, non-disabled men, being like, mm-hmm. you can fuck me. I'm viable right. for you. Like, here yeah. I am. Like, I'm available. Let me know.
Yeah. That's brilliant. Yeah. A lot of that yeah. touches on sort of what I was thinking about and expected. By the way, I know you've been on Hannah Witten's podcast, and we should shout her out as well because she was a great resource in our
oh, yeah.
research for this. And
yeah, she's Hannah Witten she's amazing. And when I was on her show when I was in London before the world fell apart,
right?
And I was a huge fan of her for years and years, and so when I got to do that and like sit across from her at the Airbnb where I was staying and like just mm-hmm. hang out with Hannah Witten, I was like, this is so surreal and weird, but you're great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She had a great video.
Like it. Yeah.
Yeah. A video about like, asking other people who have disabilities, like what is the misconceptions that people have? And something that I hadn't thought about was that everyone assumes that you're always in pain.
I mean, you know, that's an interesting one because could be a misconception, but it could also be totally true. And so like,
right.
Part of what I do in my work, I'm all, as you said in my bio, I'm the co-founder and chief disability officer of Handy, a sex tech company. So we just released a book mm-hmm. and one of the chapters of our book was, what is sex like with chronic pain?
Right.
And so the people that we spoke to, we got 50 people from all over the world to write in their answers to questions like, what is sex like with chronic pain? What is the best sexiest part of your disability? What is like mm-hmm. the best disabled sex you've ever had or the worst disabled sex you've ever had?
Right.
And so we got them to tell us their story, and a whole chapter was on what it's like to fuck with chronic pain.
Right.
And so what we learned was that like, yeah, pain is there for a lot of people, but sometimes mm-hmm. not. And sometimes having sex alleviates that pain.
Right.
So I think that isn't necessarily, that's not necessarily a misconception. The way that it's framed is wrong to
right.
assume that because we're disabled we're always in pain
yeah.
isn't necessarily true. A lot of the time it is, like mm-hmm. even for me right now, I'm in chronic pain right now, but yeah, you just deal and move on. But like
right.
but I think the assumption that I can't fuck you because I'm gonna hurt you,
yeah,
that's a problem. Mm.
Yeah. That's like a big misconception.
Yeah, my biggest takeaway from that video was like, oh, it's a there's a spectrum within the spectrum, and to assume any one thing mm-hmm. about disability and sex is the mistake, because there is such a range of experience and different kinds of limited abilities and different kinds of sexual preferences. The same way there's like any spectrum of like how I like to be fucked, there's a spectrum of elements of anyone's experience, which seems so right. obvious when you say mm-hmm. it, but I think what we're getting at is how reductive people can be about like, oh, I think I have one assumption about what disabled means, therefore it applies to all disabled people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I also think there's a really interesting, and this is going a little bit back to the points that you put in your clickbait article, or maybe didn't, mm-hmm. that I think there's a really interesting intersection between queer sex and disabled sex, because we've talked about a ton on the show before. We rag on straight sex a lot, even though we have a lot of it, because, you know, there's in heteronormativity, there's such a need to perform what we think is standardized mm-hmm. sex. And when you're rewriting the script and starting with a blank page of like, my sex isn't going to look like conventional sex necessarily.
Right.
So let's really open up like what's possible. It opens up avenues of, like you said, like creative positions, like communication as at the forefront, as opposed to like, oh, I hope I can tell him later that thing he did sucked. That it brings those things forward, which only lead to mm-hmm. better sex, frankly. So,
right.
But I mean, there are other layers to that too. Those scripts that we have to rewrite, them. And sometimes we don't want to. Sometimes we want to, as for me as a disabled person, sometimes I want to dick down like all the other gay porn stars that I see doing out there. Like, I want to do it just like they're doing it. And then having to realize that I can't, there's grief associated with that. And there's a whole process of like how that feels. And you can't really get into it when you're in the middle of a scene or when you're in the middle of with somebody.
Yeah.
But I think we should talk about how like, and just generally we need to talk about how like a lot of the times disabled people are forced to rewrite the script. And it does make the sex better and it's great. But like, there are definitely moments in my sex life where I'm like, I just want to suck your dick and I don't want to talk about how I'm disabled right now. Can I just do this with you and not think about that I have a disability?
Right.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
I loved your article in Out about how you hired a sex worker. I thought it was beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
And just like how having someone who's already so comfortable with sex and being like, what do you like? It was the first time that you felt like your needs were put first.
It was. And I mean, since that article's now almost 6 years old. Wow.
Oh, wow.
I've worked predominantly with sex workers now for my needs to be met. So I have a primary sex worker and I'll shut him out because he's the guy you saw in the video.
Oh, great. I was going to ask.
His name is John Shield and we've been working together now for almost 4 years.
Wow.
And he's someone that I really, you know, I respect and admire him because when I asked him to do the video, like he jumped at it and said, sure, no problem. Like, let's figure it out. And we spent like a couple of hours sitting down together and figuring out how my disability would be incorporated into the scene and how like, you know, there's a scene in the video where you see me get out of my wheelchair and you see me get put in the bed and he does all that. And like, we spent ample time talking about the way the wheelchair is going to be framed and why that's important and how do we bring disability into the story and still make it sexy. And he wanted to be a part of that. And so I, you know, to have my very first porn scene be with someone that I already knew and trusted, but also understood the value of what I was trying to do by doing that was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It shows too. I mean, we'll get to it after in the second half, but it's clear that, I mean, it's a role play scene, but I'm also like, but they've done this before. There's a chemistry there.
And comfortability.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. There's a comfortable exchange there that was really cool to see. But we'll get to that in a little bit. We'll save that for later for sure.
Something also I never really thought about, like when we were doing research for this episode, was like, there was this article in the Canadian Medical Association Journal about like how the sexuality of the disabled is often overlooked. And just like how to pleasure yourself even. And that like how to ask for help from someone, like someone who's like taking care of you or things like that to get like proper positioning and that, you know, there's been like guides and things like that and talks in order to basically like support sexual health and intimacy and care facilities.
I mean, and there has been, but again, and then I mean that's an important conversation, but again, like it needs to be mainstream. It needs to be outside of just the supported housing units. Like I live with caregivers, like they're in the building where I am right now, and if I wanted somebody they'd come up, but I wouldn't feel super comfortable being like, hey, could you come up and help me like get my like dick out so I can have a hot jerk. Like it just feels really weird.
Yeah.
So I would never, like it just feels super uncomfortable because you understand that even though this is your home, this is their workplace. So you don't really want to, like, it's very uncomfortable. So that's part of why my sister and I started our sex tech company, Handy, which is because we realized that there wasn't really a sex tech that somebody with a disability could use on their own to get off. So we're working on a toy to do that. So we're really, really excited about that.
That's so exciting.
Yeah.
I mean,
fucking awesome.
And it's huge. It definitely needs to be talked about more because, you know, the World Health Organization says sexuality is a basic need.
And pleasure is a human right.
That's
so
right.
So why are we talking about it more?
Like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I'm also curious, Drew, and this is a dicier area, hence me being like excited to be like talking about it. But I'm interested to hear your perspective on like care fetishes and devoteeism, and if you I'd have experience with is the wrong question, but if you have perspective on that, or if you have strong opinions about, you know, a lot of times there's a little bit of a sidebar, but you know, when we pick search terms for this show, we typically pick things that like are hot to a range of people, but throwing out disability as a search term is a little bit tricky and potentially problematic to say, like, get out there and watch porn that fetishizes people.
Yes.
So I want to talk about that and also invite you to talk about your perspective of the fetish or even preference around this, and if you have strong feelings about it.
I mean, I think devoteeism on my show, I just recently recorded an episode with a guy and his girlfriend, and his girlfriend's a devotee. They call themselves devs, and she's a devotee, and she's into people who are disabled, and that's what she's attracted to. And we spent an hour where she just told me, like, from the time she was young, she was attracted to them, and it was the thing she was into. And and he also was into the fact that she's into him. And so I think there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's really the way that it was framed to me, and the way that I've learned about it through talking to people who have the experience, is that it doesn't have to be this creepy power dynamic struggle thing. It can be, oh, I am really into you because you're disabled. Like, that's not, that isn't, that shouldn't be something inherently bad. I think the way we, I think even in the disability community, we sometimes villainize people who are devotees because sometimes they will go too far. They'll dehumanize us, and they'll take away our agency, and they'll make us feel weird. That's where I draw the line. But if you said to me, Andrew, I think you being disabled is fucking hot, and I want to, like, let's go because of that. Like, who am I to say that's the problem?
Right.
Also, like,
who are you to turn down a blowjob?
Our dick sucked, you know?
I mean, just want to get my dick sucked by a nice consenting person.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, I'll fetishize myself. Like, I'm sure you did your research. I mean, you've seen that that in what I do, I'll call myself a bear in a chair, or, like, you know. Right. Mm-hmm. I will totally fetishize myself. I have a shirt that I'm not wearing today, but I have a shirt that I just made that says, want to touch my joystick. Like, it's, I'm very aware of the possible comedy and using it to play with people. And also when I'm with people, sometimes in bed, I'll say, like, call me a dirty cripple. Like, it doesn't bother me if you're not dehumanizing me. Take it to a place where I then am unsafe, or you want to make it harder for me to move around, or harder for me to have the things that I need, then it's a problem. But if we're just playing and I've given you permission to do that, why not? And so I think there's a line. I think that the line has to be drawn somewhere. Mm-hmm. And for each person, the line is different. What feels comfortable for me might not be for someone else. So, and that's totally fine. But I think, again, that warrants a conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's about that consent and that agency,
right?
As you said.
Exactly.
And not about someone preventing your access or preventing your agency as part of their fetish. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I remember at one point in college, I was with a guy and we hooked up. We were going to hook up, and we went back to my place. And he was really into my chair for like 5 minutes. And I was like, oh, okay. But I'm over here with my heart on, and you're like writhing on my chair. What's happening? I'm very confused.
Yeah.
And so, like, that kind of weirded me out, because I was like, I'm happy for you, but I'm not involved in this, so what's going on?
Can I be a part of it? Or
I think the devotees that I've spoken to and the people that are part of that community, I've never seen anyone be malicious or be problematic. They just said, it's what I'm attracted to, and I want space for that. But they're afraid to come out because the disability community has been like, oh no, you're going to just fetishize me, which I don't think is entirely fair or true.
Right. Mm. Right.
Yeah. It's a relatively new concept, and therefore extra complicated. Again, shouting out Hannah Witten, part of what brought up that question for me was a roundtable she hosted with different folks with different disabilities. And even within that conversation, there being some different disagreement around devoteeism. And someone very articulately said that someone she had spoken to who's a devotee compared it to being gay in the 50s and being like, this is my preference. Like, this is a whole life ass thing. It's not just a fetish necessarily. And that being kind of eye opening for her. So also eye opening for me and interesting, a way to challenge our thought processes and be open to possibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fascinating. Cool. I wasn't even familiar with the concept until just now.
It's, oh, yeah. I guess we should define it for our listeners, too. Yeah. But it's specifically sexual arousal around disability. So care fetishism is a little different because it does, I think, have more to do with that power dynamic and with the caretaking be a part of it. But devoteeism, I believe, and feel free to expand on this, Drew, or correct me if I'm way off base, is specifically about the sexual attraction and the sexual arousal related to disability.
Yeah, as far as I know. But and from what I've learned from talking to other to the devotees, it's just attraction. They're just attracted to. Like I said, the girl that I spoke to the other day that'll be on the show in a couple of weeks.
Said
when she was young, she saw disabled people and she was just viscerally attracted to them, which, like, why should we be shunning that? We should be we should be accepting that because so many of us with disabilities want to be accepted and aren't. So, like, again, as long for me personally, as long as you're not taking away my agency and you're not taking away my ability to say no or stop, then, and as long as we've agreed on certain terms that are comfortable with each other and what's being done, again, with consent and communication, I think liking the fact that somebody is disabled is not a bad thing and shouldn't be villainized.
Yeah.
Well put.
It's a thin line, I feel like, with all fetishes, right?
Yeah.
It has to do with awareness and, again, agency and consent. So right.
And
what it comes
just
down
to have a fucking conversation about, like, what, you know.
Communication.
If somebody said to me, hey, Andrew, I think your disability's hot, but I want to restrict your movements during our sex, I'd be like, okay, that feels weird.
If
somebody said, I want to choke on your big disabled daddy dick and hold you down for a minute, like, that's, it's different.
So then you're sign me up.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. I mean, but, you know, it's a conversation. It's a discussion. And I don't think that either side, disabled or non-disabled, are having it enough because we don't talk about disability enough. So no one is getting into the middle ground of that and saying, what do you like? What do you want? What feels okay with you?
Right.
And so really, we just need to open up the lines of communication around sex and disability, like, to blow them wide open and just to have a conversation.
It's true.
Have that conversation. We've said it before. We'll say it again.
Yes.
Pretty simple, but bears repeating.
Right. Should we take a break?
Yep. Let's take a break.
Cool.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Auraframes.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Auraframe.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, wow.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Auraframes are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Auraframe, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
We're back.
We're back. And we're going to talk about the porn that Drew's in.
Hey,
we're talking about the porn with the porn star.
Very exciting. This vid is on Himeros.tv. It stars Drew Gerza. And what's the other performer's name?
John Shield.
Okay, cool. Yes. All right, great.
Yeah.
First of all, I just want to say that it was so like flawless and comfortable to watch. Mm-hmm. Like, I was never like concerned for your safety or like it just felt like a perfectly like choreographed dance, the whole thing. You know,
putting it
it wasn't even discussed. Like, it was just like this person was so used to like moving you around and you were comfortable with it. And so as a viewer, I felt safe, which I'm always appreciative of.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
And this is like a tribute homage to another video, right? Called Role Play Part 3, We're Brothers.
Yeah, that's right.
So
basically the brief came into me from Himeros.tv and they said, look, we want to do, it's our 2-year anniversary of being a site.
Yeah.
We want to take amateur people and have them recreate scenes for our 2-year anniversary. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
So John and I sat down and had to look at a scene that would make the most sense for my body and figure out, because a lot of the scenes were really acrobatic and really super like,
yeah,
super like inaccessible to me.
Sure.
So we had to find a scene that worked.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, what about this? And so we watched the scene together and figured out like, how do we incorporate my body into this?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of why we chose Brothers.
Yeah.
Not because like either of us are into incest like role play or anything.
I was like, wait, what's happening?
Yeah.
I mean, but I did like how we incorporated the disability in there right from the jump. Like, he comes in and says, oh, mom can't put you to bed tonight because so I'll do it. Like, I liked how the disability was immediately part of the scene from the minute it starts to the end.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the focus, you know.
Yeah.
It just was fact.
Yeah.
It was also fun to watch the video cold without having the knowledge that it was a recreation.
I didn't know that.
Also, I was like, okay, wait. He just said mom and dad in a way that implies they have the same one.
Yeah, I was
like, he's really taking, you know. And there was also a moment that was sort of funny for me to be like, he'd be like, can you show me the ropes? And I'm like, I feel like these people have fucked before. Like, I could be wrong, but there's no ropes here. Like, we both know the ropes.
We definitely,
like, and I think I said this before, like, John and I have been working together for like 4+ years. We know each other really well. Like, so when I asked him, he was the first person I thought of when I was approached.
Yeah.
To do the scene, and I said, I trust you the most. You're somebody that I really, you know, my disabled experience a little bit. You know what my needs are.
Mm-hmm.
I know we can do a 20-minute scene in a couple hours and have a good time, and like it'll be, I'll feel safe with you. And that's how I pitched it. I was like, you know, let's do this together. This could be, and I said to him, this will be really important for gay porn. We don't often see this, and I want, like, I'd love for you to be a part of this with me. And so then we just did it. And the room you see us in is my bedroom.
Amazing.
Like, that's my house where I am right now.
Yeah.
So,
cool.
So like, it was really cool to do like a porn scene in my house, in my bedroom with all my stuff. Like the lift you see me in when he gets me into my chair is what I use every day. Like, it was really cool to turn those things that are so desexualized and not ever considered in the sexual realm, because why would they be?
Yeah.
Turn them into something that's hot.
Yeah, and it was hot. Like, him using the lift to, like, kind of hold on to and, like grind on you. I was like, this is really hot. You know?
I was going to say the exact same thing. When he's, like, hanging off the lift and, like, sitting on your face, I was like, this is fucking hot.
Yeah,
and,
super sexy.
A really, like, brilliant incorporation of that stuff. Like,
yeah.
That's like, also why I was like, we've done this before, you know?
I mean, our running joke as sex worker and client and as friends, and we haven't seen each other in almost a year now.
Yeah.
Over a year now because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
like, you know, we talk pretty frequently over text because of the pandemic. So, like, I'll say to him, oh, I can't wait to see you again. And when we're allowed to fuck, like, it'll be great.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I just want to come over because of the lift. I don't actually want to come over for you. I want to, like, come by just for your lift. So, like, we have a really good humor about it. And it's fun. Like, I love playing with that stuff. And to see the scenes that really stick out for me are when we start making out with me in my wheelchair. Because you never see that. And I thought, I think that's really iconic. And then the scenes where I'm moving from my chair to the bed, again, you never see that.
Right.
And we I said to him, I want to keep that in. I want to see that as part of the scene.
Yes.
Because then it's like the video serves as a great poem, but also like, how do you fuck it? This is a how-to. How to fuck a disabled, like,
yeah. Yes.
How to fuck a disabled person. It really does work that way.
Right.
And so I'm, those two scenes in particular, I'm really, really proud of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It answers a lot of questions I think that people might have, being like, how does that happen? You know, like it takes a little bit more creativity, but people are getting it done, you know?
Yeah,
like,
you did it and you made, and you made it yeah. hot. And yeah. that kind of visibility and like destigmatization is so
right.
important. And it's fucking awesome to me that you right. guys did that and did it in a way that like I, as an ignorant viewer, am like turned on by. You
right.
know?
Totally.
Like,
well, good. I'm so glad.
Yeah. I mean, I like, it had like some like really nice like BDSM quality to it. Like where mm-hmm. like the face sitting and like the face riding and him like, changing the level of your bed to like get your face like further into his ass. Like I loved it. I was
like,
great.
I mean, what I loved about that too, I think also from a disability standpoint was that's accessibility. All of that stuff, while mm-hmm. it was hot and while it was like totally part of the scene.
Yeah.
Like the, him raising the bed so I could eat him out better was literally yeah. an access need.
Yeah.
And then one of the most successful sex acts for me is eating someone out because
yeah.
I don't have to do anything. You just have to put your ass in my face and I'll figure it out.
Right.
So like we really had to talk about what is accessible and how will this work. And like, yeah, he had to do a lot of the moving
right.
around of his body to incorporate to like get in those positions. And I have like one sex position in the whole movie, which is like dead turtle can't move.
But but like I love that though. Like
yeah, and who doesn't want to like flip around to sit on someone's face?
You yeah,
know? Like that's not a big ask.
Yeah, like, I mean, like honestly, as someone who's like tied up partners before and like sat on their face or like rode them or whatever, I'm like that. Watching it is hot. Like I was like, that's mm-hmm. I enjoy doing that. So like it makes sense.
Yeah, and Rachel brought up a cool point that, like, the incorporation of the equipment and the bed and, like, the position, like, all of that feels, like, BDSM vernacular. Like,
yes.
having
yes.
the equipment in place is, uh-huh. is, like, adjacent to, like, different other kinds of tools or sex toys or
right.
incorporating different kinds
restraints
of play.
Or things like that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Totally, totally. And, I mean, yeah. We, just before our lockdown in Toronto, like in September, he came by for to do a photo shoot with us.
Yeah.
Where like with me and where I'm wearing a harness and like and all the stuff and where I'm like he's biting on my nipples and
yeah.
where like, you know, so we have a very playful relationship and because I trust him.
Right.
If he said, I want to try this BDSM thing on you, I'd be like, all right, sure, all right, yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
There's a real trust there. And so
right.
when we did this, like you both said how natural it was. It really was.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't, I wasn't afraid. I wasn't scared. I wasn't like, oh my God, people are going to see this.
Right.
I was like, I'm fucking my friend and it happens to be on camera.
Right.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
great.
Yeah. And it just yeah. was, yeah, it just felt so comfortable and like, not that it felt choreographed, but it just felt just, yeah, safe, you know?
And yeah. It felt like an organic exchange.
Yes,
you know,
right.
Yeah.
The thing I hate most about porn is like a performative aspect. And there was none of that to this. It felt like genuine pleasure. You know,
mm-hmm.
and like a real experience.
Yeah. And it was like, you know, because he's a sex worker and also does porn.
Right.
When I first got to know him, he would come on and perform. And I would say, I'd stop him in the middle of our sessions and be like, I know that you're trying to be this
yeah.
character you've created, but if we're yeah. going to do this, like, just be yourself. And so yeah. we've gotten to a great place with each other where, like, we're comfortable with each other. We're literally friends. Like,
right.
before we have our sex working sessions, we'll have a coffee or go talk about our day or he'll have, you know, we'll do mm-hmm. that kind of stuff together and be really comfortable so that by the time we fuck, there's no, like, you don't have to perform. And I've been with other workers who
yeah.
want to put on that persona and it doesn't translate super well for me and doesn't make me enjoy myself. But this was like, I really trust him enough to just enjoy myself.
Mm-hmm.
And like, he knows what he knows that he's here to do this with me and he knows that I'm disabled and it doesn't bother him and he's not freaking out and none mm-hmm. of it scares him. And like, there's a real calmness in being able to do that with somebody that I really trust. And because sometimes you don't get that with him, I do.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's great. I loved it. I was very turned on watching it. So
yeah. awesome.
And you also came gloriously.
I mean, this is what people keep doing. This is what people don't seem to realize.
Yeah.
You know, people always make the assumption your dick doesn't work. I'm like, well, just watch the last like 5 minutes of the porn and then tell me it doesn't. Like,
tell my dick. Right. Do.
Yeah. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also a great reminder that like sex acts can vary. And like, I love mutual masturbation. I love masturbating for partners or watching partners masturbate for or with me.
Yeah.
And I like that we got to see that incorporated in a porn.
Right.
I think it's cool. Yeah. I think masturbation is cool.
I think that scene, that part of the scene in particular was really great because like that is most of what, like what you saw on film. Yeah. We were play acting a little bit for the camera for a little bit there, but like, that's literally what our sessions will look like. That is literally what we do. And so there was a complete comfort level of, like, if had he said, I want to try this, I would have said, sure, because I trust him. So to be able to put that on camera and then the reactions from people, like, that we got when the video first came out, people saying, oh, I've never seen this before. Oh, turn me on. Like, this is going to revolutionize gay porn because here's a disabled guy, like, eating ass for an hour, like it's hot. Like, you know, people were really excited by that because it proved to them all the misconceptions that we said earlier about sex are not necessarily true.
Yeah.
And it can still be hot.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And there was such an obvious intimacy, especially like as the film came to a close.
Yeah.
You know, like even as he was masturbating himself, I just feel like your body language and the way that you two were like engaged and sort of curled up with each other,
laying next to each other. Yeah. Yeah. It was
that comfort and that like
vulnerable
closeness between you that made it, that added to that heat and added to that believability and that like sexiness about it. I really liked that.
Mm-hmm. No, thank you. I mean, it was, again, it was something that I'm so proud of. And if we ever get the chance to see humans again, it's something that I want to do again.
Yes. Keep making it. Keep making like, content. We need to see it.
It's just an important thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, keep us posted if you do, because we'll keep sharing it with our listeners. And I'm sure there's plenty that are hungry for that content. So,
yeah.
Amazing.
And a different time. Shall we talk about Go Ask Alice?
Alex.
Yes.
Alex.
Alex, right? Yeah.
Sorry. I keep saying the book because, or the book and the song for obvious reasons.
Right. Go so Ask video, Alex.
Yes. The video is called College Dropouts Start an OnlyFans, even though I wrote and instead of and in my notes. It also stars Gracie Hayes, I believe is her friend.
Right. And Drew, you said that you know Alex?
Yeah, she, I'm pretty sure their pronouns are she, right? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I think so.
She was on my podcast episode 199 and we talked about her disabilities and her being a content creator and all that stuff.
Right.
Nice.
Right. Amazing.
Very nice.
Yeah. I remember watching her on Hannah Witten's, one of her YouTube videos. And she talks about how she was like, I was a sex worker before I had a disability and I wasn't going to let it stop me.
Yeah.
Which I loved.
Yeah.
So a little synopsis. They're, two of them are sitting out. They have like a Zoom class together. Which I was like, is this COVID friendly if you guys are together? I'm assuming you both were recently tested. And it's, you know, they're like complaining about it because they're like, we're never even going to be in class anymore. Like, what's the point? Like, why did we even enroll in school? Like, this is just so pointless. Like, have you heard about OnlyFans? That'd be a fun way to get rich. And spoiler alert, they decide to make some content.
Bold, I'll say. We found this video on many vids, and it is bold of them to reference OnlyFans on a competitor's website.
Yeah, right?
I loved it.
Yeah. But I also get it because, like, starting an OnlyFans, like, they're obviously leaning into the cachet of, like, the zeitgeist right now, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And it has that, like, fun quality, you know, that we see so often, particularly with, like, friends who also fool around, you know, the sort of, like, gentle journey into a lesbian sex act.
Right, which always starts with a lot of compliments. There's one thing I've learned about lesbian porn.
It's always about how beautiful your tits are.
Yeah, how gorgeous the other person is.
Yeah. So they start just like taking video or taking pictures and then like videos, and then they decide to make out, and then they decide to like leave the camera running and like see what happens. Uh-huh. And there's some cunnilingus and some just like light play.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, she has a stoma bag, but it's like never even referenced. Mm-hmm. It's just out. And I thought that was great. I was, you know, I thought that was refreshing to just be like, yeah, this is just happens to be the case. This is just fact. You know, we don't need to talk about
like
it.
But I also liked that it was there and I liked that you could see it through the whole thing. And I liked that it was, I said to her, I said this to her on my show. I said, like, I wish you would reference it. I want, like, I would love it if you did a whole scene, not around that, but something to do with your stone bag, or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I don't know her canon of work well enough to say whether she has or not, if she's ever referenced it.
I don't think so. From what we talked about on my show, she said, you know, that's not what I'm here to do. And I might do that, but I might not because, you know, my disability... Sometimes it really sucks and I don't always want to think about it. So like, again, totally different perspective. And I think that it's totally valid. But I loved, as a disabled person and knowing her and knowing she has disabilities, seeing that there was impactful for me. And I was like, oh, this is important to know this.
Yeah. Absolutely.
As opposed to hiding it, for sure.
She also has these like very intensely vivid tattoos, which I loved.
Yeah. I like her ink a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought the scene was... super hot. I mean, I like a scene where it's like, oh, what's going to happen? And like, here we go. My only like, oh, we don't need this anymore. Like my only moment of resistance was when they had started fooling around. And I think Gracie was going down on Alex. And then they stopped to be like, the boys are going to think this is hot. I was like, let's let that go. At that point, I'm like, I think it's hotter to be like carried away in the moment as opposed to being like, remember that premise we set up earlier?
Right.
Like, it's a very, very common porn trope. And they're obviously like leaning into that.
Well, it makes you feel it makes you feel like they're not doing it for their own pleasure. You know,
I think it would have been hotter even if like one of them had been like, this is going to make us money. And then the other one was like, oh, I forgot. That's why we were doing this.
Right.
This is just hot to
me. This just feels
like
good.
That would have been fun. But in general, I thought it was like a really hot vid. And
I did too. It felt a little bit performative at times. Like there was some of the like porny moans. But I think that just might be like that, those two performer styles. But I'm looking for more of like a grunt and like a not pretty, you know what I mean?
A beastly rumble.
Exactly.
From
I'm looking for like a face that's like in twisted ecstasy. That's like, just like sweating and grunting. That's what I love.
I mean, I would also have liked to all the beginning stuff. Like, I don't care about your profession. I don't care. I know why they had to do that. Obviously they were leaning into that stuff hard.
Yeah.
But like, I was like, okay, I don't care about the whole setup. Just, go.
Get
just
to
fuck,
it.
Just fuck.
Yeah.
Fuck.
And then I did love at the ending. I did love at the ending the little like, oh my God, we forgot to close out of Zoom. And then we find out that they just, you know,
fucked on camera.
Exactly.
And like maybe have early. Yeah, I thought that was a fun button.
Right.
I also was like, wouldn't you like close the you're like, oh no, is it happening right now? Like you'd close it, but
they just left it up. They
were I still thought it was a fun button.
Right. Right. I know. I was like, if it was me, I think I'd be a little bit more upset. But I love that they were like, who cares?
Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed the preview.
Guess we're expelled now. Yeah. Guess we don't have to worry about quitting. Yeah.
Right.
It was cute. It was fun. Yeah.
Also, when they were like, we're going to get rich, I was like, oh, don't have too high of hopes. Like, a lot of people on OnlyFans right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. You might make like $100 if you're lucky.
Yeah. That was a funny note. I thought about that too because I was like, y'all know like how much money it is or isn't. And if you think like one video, like we're gonna be rich, but I was like, I guess they're sort of making fun of that because they're aware, like, no, it's a grind and you gotta keep putting the fucking content out. Yeah.
Unfortunately, not all of us are Bella Thorne and we can't.
Exactly.
And we can't put not nudes on the internet and make millions of dollars. Like,
That's right.
Yeah. No, thanks.
Terrible. Oh, well, what do we think? Are either of these going into your spank banks? Drew, don't feel the need to answer if you don't want to admit that you masturbate to yourself.
I mean, I wouldn't say that goes into my spank bank because it's me.
Yeah. I'll take the real thing.
I think in terms of the representation of spank bank, both of these definitely have to go in there because they show disability in a raw way that I don't think we're used to seeing.
Absolutely.
Both with Alex's and mine, like mine shows more of the equipment side and more of like somebody with a totally different level of disability. But they both kind of prove that, yes, disabled people are hot. Here's proof.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes.
Absolutely. Preach. I agree. Preach. Same.
Yeah. I thought both these were hot.
Yeah.
I did.
I thought they were both hot. I like Drew's more because I like two men together. And that's just my
Rachel
tea,
does
baby.
Love a man on man vibe. And I do too, just less exclusively.
Yeah. After I've been watching so much porn doing this podcast, I'm like, wow, the thing that just really just continues to hit after hit after hit is two dicks.
Yeah. Yeah. And me actually, girl on girl, is like increasingly hot. So here we are.
Nice.
And different ends of the spectrum. And also, frankly, horny for all of it for the most part.
Right.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining us, Drew. Do you want to go ahead and shout out some plugs or anything you want to direct our listeners to?
Yes.
Sure, I can plug myself. You can follow me at Drew Gerza on Instagram and Twitter, my main places, where I talk mostly about disability, justice, sexuality, my feelings on being disabled, a whole bunch of stuff. You can also follow my website, www.drewgerza.com, to book me for cool things, digital talks, like virtual presentations, stuff like that. And as I said earlier, my sister and I have just launched a sex toy company called Handy. So you can go to www.thatshandy.co and you can, so that's Handy with an I. And I can put it, I'll send it to you guys so you have it.
Cool.
That's we can drop it in our notes.
Yeah.
.co. And then there you can pick up our The Handy Book of Love, Lust, and Disability, which is the book we wrote all about sex and disability. And we curated it with 50 other disabled people all over the world. And yeah, follow us on all those places and on the internet, on the socials for Handy at That's Handy on Instagram and Twitter.
Mm-hmm. And your podcast, Disability After Dark.
Oh, yes, of course. My show is new episodes every Saturday, Disability After Dark. I'm also looking for new guests to come on. So if you're listening to this and you want to come on the show and explore disability with me, I'd love to have you.
Great.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Drew.
Thanks so much for having me.
And before we do our little closing for our listeners, we want to give a special shout out to our Patreon subscriber, Gilbert. Thanks so much for subscribing, Gil. It means
thanks,
the world.
Gil. Love you.
And thanks so much for listening to Girls on Porn. You can find us on Instagram at Girls on Pern. That's porn without the O. On Twitter at GOP the podcast, at our website, girlsonporn.com. And now, as aforementioned, on patreon.com/girlsonporn.
Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the show if you haven't already. And hey, why don't you check out our Patreon? We got some thirsty content up there for you.
This has been Girls on Porn, the only GOP that's actually good.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.